This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University.
In this edition of the Legislative Gazette, we'll wrap up the budget and hear about an issue which is sure to generate considerable debate later in the session: banking deregulation. Well, it's finally over. Better late than never. New York has a budget in place. Rick Lepkowski wraps up that portion of the legislative year.
After Governor Cuomo and legislative leaders announced that a budget for the 1985-86 fiscal year was agreed upon, almost a week late, but there was agreement, the governor said the system worked well. Not perfect, but well. The legislature has now completed their immediate work and have headed on home for a two-week Easter Passover vacation. But it was a long, hard road to secure that budget. Only last week it seemed that the budget negotiations had broken down completely. The major hurdle, what to do with those four taxes. Sin taxes, the governor called them, on alcohol, cigarettes, long-distance telephone lines, and petroleum products. Governor Cuomo and Democratic leaders in the legislature called for the extension of those taxes to bolster income tax cuts to New Yorkers. But the Republicans claimed there was enough money for hefty income tax cuts and the elimination of the so-called sunset taxes. But the Republicans finally gave in, and Senate Majority Leader Warren Anderson, after first proposing to pass a budget without tax cuts and sunsets and discuss them at a later date, abandoned his attempt to let the sunsets die. Governor Cuomo, however, also had to make his share of concessions. The biggest, perhaps, was Senator Anderson's refusal to accept the governor's proposal that the state collect money from unredeemed bottle deposits to fund toxic cleanup. But the gives and takes were made, and a budget is in place. It was late, but it is in place. This was the first time under the Cuomo administration that a budget was not in place at the beginning of the state's fiscal year, April 1st, and Republican Assembly Leader Clarence Rappelier says the governor has no one to blame but himself.
I just know of no reason why we couldn't have arrived at this point a week ago. But it appeared that nobody really, he just didn't seem to push or even to start the dialogue until very late.
But when all was said and done and an agreement was reached, the leaders, both Republicans and Democrats, Governor Cuomo, even reporters who were dead tired of standing outside the governor's office until all hours of the morning waiting for a break in the talks, were all smiles. Senate Majority Leader Warren Anderson said the 85-86 budget is a better budget than the original proposed by Governor Cuomo back in January. And Governor Cuomo said this is the best budget yet he's seen as governor.
There are some portions of it that are disappointments. The bottle bill is one, and there are some others, but overall, I regard this as an extraordinary budget, an extraordinarily successful effort. I congratulate Speaker Fink, Clarence Rappelier, Fred Orenstein, and Warren Anderson. And in all seriousness, I tell you that this effort was an extraordinarily professional one. It was done with diligence, with candor, with imagination. Not everybody got everything. But if all governments could work as well as this one did on this occasion, I think we would all be much better off.
It's true that the result of probably the largest number of meetings that any legislative group have ever had with the governor has resulted in a far better budget, in my view, and I think in the view perhaps even of the governor, than the one that was submitted to us in January. I think we should be proud of the fact that we have put in place some substantial tax cuts. We have put in place money in positions such as in education, mental hygiene, areas of that nature where it will be put to good use.
Senator Anderson was most pleased about the personal income tax cuts to New Yorkers, a package that is worth $635 million to taxpayers this year and amounts to $1.6 billion over 3 years. To put it in perspective, A family of four with an annual income of $30,000 will take home an additional $581 a year by 1987. Also included in the budget, the 10% increase in welfare grants sought by Governor Cuomo, 148 more staffers to the Department of Environmental Conservation for environmental monitoring, a $460 million increase in education aid to local school districts, that's much more than the $330 million originally proposed by the governor, and a $68.5 million increase in revenue sharing, half of that based on a need formula. In addition, the budget included toughened penalties for tax cheats in New York State, coupled with a three-month tax amnesty provision that would allow tax scofflaws to pay up without penalty before the new, tougher penalties go into effect. Similar programs have been tried in Massachusetts and Illinois with quite a bit of success, and the governor's budget office estimates tax amnesty could bring in up to $75 million in overdue tax payments. Added all up, including tax cuts and money to reduce the state's accumulated debt, it is, according to Governor Cuomo, the first gap-balanced budget in any state in the history of this country, a budget that calls for state spending of $38.8 billion in the 1985-86 fiscal year. In Albany, I'm Rick Lepkowski.
One of our regular contributors here on the Legislative Gazette is Gerald Benjamin, a political scientist and Republican county legislator from Ulster County. Here's another of Jerry's observations on New York politics.
Scratch a New Yorker and you'll uncover a constitutional lawyer. Or at least that's how it seems, the way everyone in the Empire State is so quick to assert his or her rights. Perhaps it's a result of living with a generation of watching TV cops give TV robbers the Miranda warning on late-night crime shows. But of course, most people don't know their rights. Even college graduate political science majors tend to lack a thorough familiarity with the Bill of Rights in the U.S. Constitution. And most with graduate degrees would be surprised to learn that their rights under the New York State Constitution, yes, the New York State Constitution, may extend beyond those guaranteed under the national document. In the case of the Shad Alliance versus Smith Haven Mall, a five-judge panel of the Appellate Division, Second Department in Brooklyn, recently decided what the U.S. Supreme Court would not, that the right to free expression in New York State is, under some circumstances, protected, even when exercised on private property. The Shad Alliance is an anti-nuclear group. Twice during the summer of 1980, some of its members were distributing leaflets at the enormous Smith Haven Mall in Suffolk County, Long Island, when they were directed to stop by a security guard. They did, but decided to go to court. Knowing from previous U.S. Supreme Court decisions that expression on private property was not protected under the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, Alliance attorneys sued in state courts, relying solely on the New York State constitutional guarantee that, quote, every citizen may freely speak, write, and publish his sentiments on all subjects being responsible for the abuse of that right, unquote. They won in state Supreme Court, and the case came to the Appellate Division. A decision was delayed when a four-judge panel was evenly divided and had to add a fifth member. Ultimately, the court decided that privately owned shopping malls were the modern functional equivalents of publicly owned main streets in old downtowns, and that therefore leafleting ought to be permissible in them, subject to reasonable constraints as to time, place, and manner. In doing this, the court was following a precedent set in a similar case by the California High Court, which specifically led to a U.S. Supreme Court comment that rights under state constitutions could go beyond those in the federal document. In a stinging dissent, two of the five Second Department judges who heard this case denounced the violation of property rights by the majority decision. They were unhappy, too, with the activist stance of the court and insisted that, as with the First Amendment, the free expression provision in the New York State Constitution was designed to limit only government action, not private action on private property. If for no other reasons than because the Appellate Division was closely divided on a matter involving the clash of basic rights, Shad Alliance will surely be taken on appeal by New York's High Court, the Court of Appeals. And given the current composition of that court, it is very likely that the Appellate Division majority will be upheld. More and more, as the U.S. Supreme Court retreats from libertarian positions established during the Warren Court era, state constitutions are becoming prime arenas for the assertion of rights and the testing of rights in conflict. Though states' rights has often been seen as a conservative concept in modern politics, Shad Alliance illustrates that this is not automatically the case. The federal principle is a neutral one, and one that operates to affect the lives of all New Yorkers, whether they know it or not.
Thank you.
It is a fact of legislative life that the issues which grab the headlines aren't always the most important. It is also true that issues that sound pretty dull on the surface can be extremely important. Today we'll talk about one of those issues with Assemblyman Herman Denny Farrell of New York City. But first, a background report on banking deregulation from Bill Gralty.
Glad you brought that subject up. It's a particularly good subject for radio discussion because it's a hard thing to deal with in 600-700 words. Most people don't even know we're trying to do it, deregulating the insurance business. It's definitely an insider's topic, and as long as it is, we're not going to get it done.
As Governor Cuomo and others admit, it is not a topic that easily captures the public imagination or fans the flames of passion. But the proposals under consideration could lead to some fundamental, far-reaching changes in the financial system of our state. From the beginning of commerce, almost, there have been banks, storehouses of money, sources of loans, purveyors of financial services, and there have been insurance companies offering protection and their own brand of investments. There was traditionally very little overlap, but in recent years, insurance companies have been acting more like banks, offering more sophisticated forms of investment and financial management, and banks have been eyeing the lucrative insurance field as a way of broadening their range of services. Legislation is under consideration which would deregulate insurance and banking, allowing banks to sell insurance. Other bills would allow mutual insurance companies to eventually offer some banking services. Among the arguments being heard in connection with insurance deregulation is what happens to the independent insurance agent. That agent, that fixture on every main street in the state, feels threatened. He says banks would be able to coerce customers into purchasing insurance only from the bank. They say giant financial firms would come into the field, driving them out of business, the way giant supermarket chains drove that other main street fixture, the small grocery store, out of business. Again, Governor Cuomo.
My judgment is that if you open it up, certainly some of the businesses are going to get hurt. But that's what happens in a free enterprise system. That's what happened to my father's grocery store. I mean, if you had banned supermarkets, we'd maybe still be in business, but we had a little mama and papa store. We didn't have the foresight to broaden it out. The supermarkets came in, and, you know, all we had was delivery, and that wasn't enough to compete because their prices were lower, the range of services was greater. That's called free enterprise.
I'm Bill Gralty.
Democratic Assemblyman Herman Denny Farrell has made plenty of news recently with his plans to challenge Mayor Ed Koch for mayor of New York. But here in Albany, he's also deeply involved in the issue of banking deregulation. Assemblyman, you're chair of the powerful banking committee in the Assembly. There is a banking deregulation bill this year. Could you explain to us what that's going to do?
The bill that we have would be the continuation of the DeWin Commission report, which came out February 15, 1984.
Who was DeWin?
DeWin was a gentleman who chaired a committee set up by an attorney, who chaired a committee set up by Governor Cuomo to look at the whole financial service industry within New York State. They made 39 recommendations. Some of those recommendations were passed last year. And this year we're looking at trying to pass the remainder of them. Included in there was the, what I call the cross-pollinization of banking services and insurance services.
This would allow the banks to own and operate insurance companies?
Yes, it would allow banks to own and operate insurance companies, and it would allow insurance companies to own banks.
Okay, but of course, insurance companies owning banks has some problems, I understand, on the federal level with doing that. So really what we're talking about is banks owning insurance companies in New York State.
Well, the federal level does not directly affect New York State. Remembering that we have a dual banking system in this state, state-chartered banks, we have the power to regulate and give certain powers, the same thing with insurance companies.
What would be the best single reason for deregulating banks in New York State?
Well, when you use the term deregulation, we've got to be careful because the federal government has deregulated most of the powers of the banks in the state. When we allow this cross-pollinization, remembering again that we will create separate companies, bank holding companies will own insurance companies. What the greatest value to New York State would be increased jobs.
How do you figure that?
Well, if you have a Citicorp forming an insurance company, they will create new jobs in forming that insurance company. The other thing we would be doing is, as New York State continues to grow in the financial industries, because today it's not just banking or insurance. I don't know. Right now, we have a law that says you can't sell insurance if you're a bank, and you can't be a bank if you're an insurance company. And then we have Sayers and Roebuck's. Sayers and Roebuck's, right now, you can go in, buy a pair of shorts at the first counter, go to the second counter, insure those shorts, go to the third counter, Dean Witter, and lose your shorts in the stock market. So we have reached a point that though we say these things are not allowed, it's happening every day in different forms.
Okay, let's look at some of the objections to this. Number one, the insurance companies are saying that the pillar and post of every town, the independent insurance agent, will be driven out of business by this arrangement, that the banks essentially will start selling insurance, and that will put the independent agents out of business. And these are the people who really do serve a lot of towns and do have a lot of jobs, make a lot of jobs. These jobs will be lost.
In the beginning, this may happen. But I think what you'll find is happening upstate right now, since these new offerings have been considered by the legislature or are being considered by the legislature, many of the independent insurance agents are going and making deals with their local banks to make sure that they will be the ones selling the insurance. So I don't think you will lose that many jobs. You will lose a certain amount of the agents that are not competent, because as you increase competition, you will also increase efficiency. As that efficiency increases, some people will drop out. But I would say that within 5 to 10 years after this legislation, if it is passes, I think you will find there will probably be more agents, not less.
All right, let's move on to the next naysayer comment. That in fact there will be the potential for the banks coercing the person who comes in for a loan to buy insurance from them in order to get that loan.
That is a potential, but because the independent agents are going to be watching, right now no one watches the independent agent. You call up and you say your son is 19 or your daughter is 19, you'd like to put him on your insurance, and some agents sometimes say, well, you know, that's pretty rough. By the way, I hear the value of your house has gone up. It used to be $150,000, but with inflation, it's now up to $200,000. Your policy isn't really keeping up with it. And you respond, oh, yeah, why don't you send me a new policy? They say, good, and by the way, you can have your son's insurance. Now, that wasn't coercion, but that happens. Who's watching them? No one is. Right now, if you change and have the banks do it, I will guarantee you that every fifth customer will end up being an insurance agent checking to see if that coercion is going on. So it'll probably cut it down more than you presently have it now.
That's assuming that there are insurance agents left.
There will be insurance agents left. As I said, most of them will be working with the banks.
Okay. Now, there's a third potential problem. That is, suppose the insurance companies, the major behemoth insurance companies and the major banks get together and cut out the middlemen, the independent insurance agents. Now we will see a whole class of people disappearing.
Well, how do you say that that's important, but at the same time, if that occurs, it would mean that the insurance is being sold cheaper and the consumer wins? So I'm not positive, and I don't think that will happen. I don't think General Motors and Ford has never gotten together, so why should we assume Prudential and Citicorp will get together? I don't think that will happen. You will end up with a Citicorp forming their own independent insurance company, and it will be a separate unit held by the holding company. It will not be the same. They will not have the same books. They will not have the same staff. It will be a separate company. It will be a division of Citicorp. And I don't see that there will be any other forms of cross-joining.
After the Great Depression, Mr. Chairman, we began to really insure banks to make sure that banks would not go under. We saw example this year, last year, of Continental Illinois, and the federal government comes along and bails them out to make sure that they're all right. Now, insurance has been described to me as a very risky business. So now, since we are dedicated to, quote, deregulation, but at the same time we prop up our banking institutions, now we say to them it will be all right to engage in what has been a risky business up until now, which is insurance, and you can be sure that we'll also prop you up if you get into trouble. How do you answer that one?
Well, again, because it is a separate company, it will have its separate capitalization. If the insurance company fails, it will not and cannot kick back into the parent company.
Why not?
Because they're separate corporations, and they will not have any relationship one to the other.
But they're owned by the same.
If General Motors owns Pontiac and Pontiac fails, it does not kick through into the Cadillac division. They are separate divisions. They are separate entities. They have their separate books. They're just being capitalized. They're owned by the same people, but the reasons the corporations are formed, which is limited liability, stops it kicking through to the bank. And that clearly would be set up by us and by the federal government. The other point that you mentioned, both of the failures that you've spoken about, the continental Illinois and the problem that happened in Ohio, was not because of deregulation. Those things would have happened had we not deregulated. Once in a while, we make mistakes in banking, and this happens every now and then, and you have failures. Nothing done prior, nothing done in deregulation affected those problems. They were both bad investments, and you can make bad investments as a bank under regulations or under deregulations. So I want people to understand that the failures had nothing to do with the deregulation.
Okay, that's the substance of it. Let's talk about the politics of it. We know where you stand on this. You've already explained it. The governor apparently is sympathetic to your proposal, as is the commissioner, Commissioner Teasy, as I understand it. Now, let's take a look at the third part of this. Nothing gets done in Albany without the speaker. Nothing gets done without the majority leader of the Senate. Where are they going to be on this?
Well, to begin with, I think you must understand that, as I said, this was a DeWine Commission report, so this is a governor's position. These bills are the governor. I have taken certain positions, but we have not spoken in the in the assembly. I've not spoken to Speaker Fink. I have not checked with the committee yet. These are my thinkings at this time, but further down the line, we will see what our political position will be. It is my opinion that because Superintendent TDC is no longer with the banking department, he is now the head of UDC, and we have a new superintendent, and she has not come on board officially yet, so I don't know what her thinking is going to be.
Well, it's unlikely it's going to be different than the governor who appointed her, is it?
Oh, that's true, but it also means that we probably, in my opinion, won't get to the bill this year.
Okay, so that this is probably a dead issue. What do you see Warren Anderson's position as a Republican in this state? I mean, here's two major businesses, insurance and banking. What is he going to do on this?
Well, I don't speak for the Senate or Warren Anderson. He'll have to make his own decisions. I would say that out of that DeWine Commission, by the way, one of the things that I am going to be pushing this year will be Lifeline. One of the recommendations at my behest from the DeWine Commission was the fact that we were trying to create a guaranteed entry into the banking system for those people who might not normally be able to get into the system because we're pricing them out. And that bill will be one of the things that I will be pushing the rest of the session.
Assemblyman, it has been said that money is the mother's milk of politics. This is an issue, the kind of issue that doesn't get much play out there, this business. We're concerned about it. It probably may be one of the bigger issues of the year, this question of insurance and banks, but it's not the kind of thing that turns people on. Is it important that they understand what the issue is?
I think it's very important because this, again, affects their ability to buy products cheaper. As you increase the competition and you take down the barriers, you lower prices. Of course, everybody can point to what's happening in interest rates and say that isn't true. There are other reasons that's occurring. But I personally believe that as you increase competition, you aid the consumer, and that's important. And as I pointed out earlier, the most important thing of this is we must keep New York State as the premier state in financial services. Mm-hmm. We have to guarantee that we are the number one state. And the way to do that, in my opinion, not affecting either the safety or soundness of either institution, is to bring in insurance and banking into the state.
Now, is this the kind of thing where we're going to see the banks and the insurance companies going at this legislative process full scale, contributing a lot of money, buying tables at both parties, spring flings and fall thaws? Is this going to be a real moneymaker for the politicians in a way?
Well, 1977 or 1978, NYPERG did a report of monies donated by banks. They did it during a December session because they wanted to prove that the banks were supposedly buying the legislature. I remember looking at the list. I was not a chairman, and most people thought the same thing I did. They were the cheapest son of a guns in town. And what I mean is when you averaged it out per legislator, it turned out like a $100 ticket to an affair per legislator, which is not a lot of money. And as you say, mother's milk is running for office. So I think you will find that both industries will not overspend because that in itself would become the issue. So I think you will not find, a matter of fact, they will probably become skimpier in their donations not to make that the issue.
Assemblyman Denny Farrell. So the banks want the power to sell and underwrite insurance. Of course they do. They'll make more money. But they say they can do it a lot cheaper, and that if they are allowed to do it, they'll employ more people, and what's more, that this is the look of the future, and that if we let banks sell insurance, that New York will stay the commercial and financial capital of the world, and all New Yorkers will eventually win as a result. I suppose you could call it a trickle-down theory, if someone else hadn't coined that phrase. Just as naturally as the banks are for it, the various segments of the insurance industry are against it. They say that in the long run it won't be cheaper to let banks write insurance. They say that giving the behemoth banks the right to join with the insurance industry will give them even more power and control over the whole society. They say that the independent insurance agent in our towns and cities will be driven out of business, causing incalculable harm and problems, as well as loss of jobs. That, my friends, is the issue, and I have no idea who's right or wrong, but I do know that in the legislative game, that it falls to the proponent of change to make the most vigorous argument. And so far, there are too many unanswered questions on the issue. So now we are down to the nitty-gritty. We are down to all those who will benefit from a fight of these proportions, the lobbyists, the lawyers, and even the press, who will be treated to the sight of two major inside lobbying groups going head-to-head. In most towns, the insurance agency head and the banker are two of the most respected, revered, and frankly well-heeled persons in the town. And when they start putting the moves on their legislators, you can be sure the sweat will begin to accumulate and the collars on these assemblymen and senators will seem a lot tighter. And if the sleeping giant, the public, should, in some unlikely event, decide to get concerned about all of this, the traditional insiders, the players, the politicians, may get a whole new perspective. So we have an epic struggle coming on, one which may last for years, which will be in everyone's interest in the legislative process. The money will keep flowing, the lobbyists will grow fatter, and the journalists happier because their stories will write themselves. But don't ask me who's writing all of this. I haven't got a clue. But you know, neither do the adversaries in this battle. But that has never stopped us from moving ahead before. Stay tuned. That's our show for this week. The legislature will be taking a couple of weeks off, but you can be sure we'll be back next week with another look at state government and politics. Bill Guaralty produces and edits this program. Rick Lipkowski is associate editor. Please address comments and questions to us at WAMC, Box 13000, Albany, New York, 12212. I'm Alan Chartok.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Alan Chartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University of New York College at New Paltz.